Well, I had to come support Scott.
Hold on, Mr. Chair, we got to wait. Okay, blue light's on. Okay.
All right. Today's May 19th, 2015. This is the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. We are going to carry over Senate Bill 358, and we will be working the rest of the bills. But first, we will do a public hearing on Senate Bill 341. And with that, we will go ahead and call up Scotty Jones, Marianne Nash. Please begin when you're ready.
Absolutely. Vice Chair Refield, members of the committee, my name is Marianne Nash, here today with the Oregon Farm Bureau. We are here testifying in support of Senate Bill 341. This is addressing a concern that has been out there for quite some time. We've had several members that are engaging in agritourism activities, which has numerous benefits. I could go on and on in terms of supplementing farm income, but also providing educational opportunities and a chance to really interact with farming landscapes, learn about where their food comes from, learn more about agriculture to members of the general public. However, we've heard some concerns from our providers that there's been difficulty obtaining liability insurance due to the agritourism activities. And so this bill kind of answers that concern and we think strikes the right balance between ensuring that there's a level of liability protection for producers engaged in these activities while also, you know, making sure that there's plenty of protection for the public that is also engaged in these activities and participating out on folks' farms. And so I will let some of our providers speak for themselves, and you can see some of the really awesome things that they've been doing in terms of agritourism activities and helping folks engage with agriculture. And I'm mostly here to answer any questions that folks have about the scope of the liability protection, what it looks like, how it would apply. I used to do insurance defense work in a previous life, so I should be able to answer any questions that folks have.
All right, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to start this. My name is Scotty Jones. Thank you very much for letting me testify. I have Leaping Lamb Farm in Alsea. We host a farm stay, so that's a form of agritourism. And the images that you're going to see on the screen up there are from our farm and also from other agritourism farm stays here in Oregon. And I'm just going to let them flip through. So it just gives you an idea of what I mean when I talk about farm stays and agritourism and inviting guests onto our properties. I am a sheep farmer since 2003 with my husband, and we have offered a farm stay, which is lodging on our farm, overnight lodging, since 2006 as a way to stay sustainable. We only raise about 40 lambs a year, and that is not a sustainable way to make a living. I am also the founder and executive director of the U.S. Farm Stay Association, which is a 501c6. So I do hear stories not only from around Oregon but around the country in terms of liability protection. I'm a founding member of a new Oregon Agritourism Network, and so I also helped organize the first agritourism summit that was put on at OSU, and I've been working on this bill with a number of other people. So what I offer as a farm stay is actually a chance for people to connect with the farmer. And you know, large-scale operations don't and can't invite people onto their farm. So we are kind of the face of farming for a lot of people and a lot of very disconnected urbanites. And so they enjoy coming out and they enjoy learning and they enjoy showing their children where food comes from. We allow them to collect eggs and they feed the chickens and they hold the baby lambs. And they ask us questions that are very, very basic questions. So we provide actually a really important role in making a connection these days. And then they get to eat all that stuff that they pick out of the garden and that they pick, get out of the chicken house. The other kinds of agritourism operations, though, that we could talk about would be things like pumpkin patches at Easy Orchards, flower festivals at Wooden Shoe Tulip Festival, You Pick at Fairfield Farms, which is for the best strawberries I've ever eaten in my life. Plate and pitchfork dinners, school groups that come out, and You Cut Christmas trees, crush parties at vineyards, cattle drives on ranches. So all of those are really considered a form of agritourism. they're very we're very entrepreneurial in ways that we try to create extra income for our operations, and this way we don't have to rely on weather and commodity prices necessarily for everything that we do. So what this bill would address, and it was already mentioned, and it's similar to the equine limited liability law that was passed in the 90s, but it would allow us to obtain insurance, which sometimes and is very difficult to do because a lot of insurance agencies aren't really clear on what's happening on our farms. This would be a similar signage bill that we would post on our farms at our gates to let people know that farms are dangerous places and you just need to be careful and you need to listen to what our rules are and pay attention. You know, when I came a couple of years ago here to give some testimony, it had been raining outside and nobody told me that I shouldn't be walking on the tiles that are marble out way out there, and I fell flat on my back. So it's just whatever you're not used to. So this is a way of basically saying, this is a farm, be careful where you walk. It's not to protect us from doing something horrible. I mean, it's a limited liability protection. So it's not for gross negligence. We're trying to get this passed. We are also hoping that eventually insurance rates would drop over time. We need to just show insurance companies that we are good farmers and we're careful with our guests. And in terms of agritourism for Oregon, because I think this bill is really kind of important for that, it's rural economic development. When people come out to my farm, they don't just stay with me. They shop at our local store. We have a gas station. We have a cafe. And so they use the services that are in the community. And, you know, a lot of counties and tourism offices are really interested in getting people out to the country, but if they don't have any place to stay, then they go home again. So those dollars go back with them to the urban areas. It does also afford us as small farms a chance to be sustainable, and with the strict land use laws that there are, it's hard for us to do other kinds of things, especially on our EFU land. So allowing us to invite people because we know that we have some protection makes it better for us and it makes it better for our guests. There are a lot of other states that have already passed similar laws to this. And my final thoughts would be that this is a good bill, and a lot of people have put in a lot of work, and there have been compromises made on it. We're not talking about limiting liability on everything, but we need to balance the opportunity of our agritourism enterprises and what that offers to urbanites with the liabilities that we take on by inviting people to come out to our farms and share our lifestyle. Thank you very much. If there are any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Okay, is there any questions for this panel? All right, seeing them, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And we'll call up Arthur Towers and Ivan Maluski.
I like it.
Like family farmers and trial lawyers coming together.
Well, Chair,
unholy alliance.
Well, Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to hear this bill today and talk about it. We've been supporting this legislation for a long time. This is Ivan Maluski with Friends of Family Farmers, for the record. And we're a group that represents small and mid-sized farmers. We've got about 5,000 members and supporters statewide, and we're supporting Senate Bill 341A today. I've given you a testimony, but I'll kind of jump ahead a little bit just to note some things. First of all, this bill is the result of a work group that convened during the interim. It was convened by the Senate Judiciary Committee. It formed after hearings were held on a similar bill from the 2013 session, where we weren't able to get to the complete compromise at that time. Participants in the work group included our organization, Friends of Family Farmers, the Oregon Farm Bureau, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, individual agritourism providers, the Oregon Destination Marketing Organizations, Oregon Department of Agriculture, Clackamas County, Country Financial Insurance and Travel Oregon and more. So we had a lot of stakeholders at the table. We met throughout the summer of 2014. And we were able to hone this, and we were still, frankly, honing it as we came into the Senate Judiciary Committee. And so we made some amendments during the process. Art worked very closely with Art from the trial lawyers on that, on the amendments. And I think we've gotten to a very good place, and we were able to get a unanimous vote from the Senate Judiciary Committee and ultimately the Senate. So just to kind of then give you that, after that background, to say that, you know, this, if we were to pass this legislation, it means that Oregon would have a statute similar to ones that are now in place in 20 other states. Which provide a liability protection for agritourism providers, folks that do everything from UPIC to farm stays to corn mazes, what have you. Whenever you have the public coming onto your property, you know, you bear some risk. And so this bill simply says that if you post the required signage, if you act in a you know, in a way that's not negligent, if you, you know, inspect your equipment, these types of things, you can enjoy this protection from liability suits. So you know, in short, you know, agritourism is a growing way to help kind of provide some economic activity in rural Oregon. There are other limitations. One thing I guess I'll flag that we made in this bill that's unique to Oregon, we wanted to make sure that folks had their land use permits in place so that we weren't inadvertently encouraging things that were not appropriate in our land use system. So we have a specific amendment that Thousand Friends worked on to help make sure that as long as you've got the appropriate permits in place, you also can enjoy this. So I'll leave it there. If there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But this is a good bill. We hope you'll move it forward. Thank you.
Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, my name is Arthur Towers with the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. This was a very difficult topic for us, very difficult for two reasons. One is that we feel that it's a core principle that Oregonians should have the right to trial by jury. And this is a constitutional right that's central to any democracy. And the legislation does infringe on that right to a certain degree. It's doubly important to us because, as you saw from the slideshow, what we're talking about here are families and kids, right? This is an industry that markets to children in a good way, unlike maybe others, but in a very positive way. And so we were worried about families losing their rights. But I really commend the industry for stepping up and staying at the table through a year's worth of kind of difficult negotiations to figure out a way where the rights and protections for the industry are pretty clearly spelled out, but the rights of families are spelled out as well. And so figuring out how to make that balance work, I think, is really a success story. One of the things I'm actually most proud of this session. You know, this bill succeeds where other bills have failed. Senate Bill 341 doesn't create artificial barriers for families seeking remedies in court. The family doesn't have to certify that an expert in farm implements will be available to testify if there's an accident involving a tractor pulling a hay wagon. The family also doesn't have to meet timelines and deadlines that are unique to suits involving the agritourism industry. At the same time, the industry does have a firm defense against injuries due to the inherent risks of agritourism. Like the previous witnesses testified, you know, parents who bring their families to one of these facilities, you know, should know that it has some risk involved in it, so should take special precautions. So I do feel like the bill captures the right balance, unlike a number of the other immunity bills that are out there this session. And so we strongly support the bill and hope you will vote aye on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair. Might be able to answer this yourself. I'm looking at the liability protection on page 2, the first three lines, and when it says it is not on line 3, is not liable for an injury, should it or does it need to spell out criminal or civil liability, or is liable just assumed to mean both?
And in my interpretation of this, and the panel can also answer, this is specifically addressing civil liability, so criminal liability is a whole other ball of wax, if you will.
And thank you.
Yeah, I agree. Chair Rayfield, Representative Stark, I agree the same way that it would be zeroing in on civil liability.
Okay.
Are there any other questions for this panel? All right, seeing none, thank you both very much. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 341? All right, seeing none, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 341, and we'll stand at ease for a moment. Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness Committee will come back to order. We will go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 515. Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 515A, we heard this last Tuesday on the 19th. The measure directs the Department of Administrative Services to provide a method for users of the Oregon Transparency website to offer suggestions regarding the website's form or content. It requires posting on the website of economic development information related to the Oregon Product Investment Fund, beginning and expanding Farmer Loan Program, Oregon Innovation Council and Strategic Investment Program, as well as reports on certain tax expenditures. The measure requires posting of a description of the process for requesting public records from public bodies and also authorizes local governments to post notices of public meetings on the website. The measure has no amendment. It came to our committee with a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact and a Senate floor vote of 30-0, Mr. Chair.
All right, so we're looking for a motion to move this to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Chair Rayfield, I move to move 515A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Bueller moves Senate Bill 515A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right, seeing none, the motion carries. And well, Representative Nierman?
Representative Stark was one of the co-sponsors on the bill.
Oh, as far as carrying it, I think Wisnet is hoping to. He's one of the original chiefs.
Yes. Representative Wisnet was one of the chief sponsors on the bill.
Okay. So we'll let Representative Wisnet carry this to the floor, and then would you read it to have Representative Stark, you be a co-carrier or just Representative Wisnet?
Just Wisnet.
Okay, so we'll have Representative Wisnet carry it to the floor. And with that, we'll go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 515. And we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 922A. Mr. Brennan.
All right. Let's see. So, Senate Bill 922A, we heard this one last Tuesday as well. It's a measure that exempts from certain regulations legal access providers that charge a fee to customers for the purpose of providing the customer access to legal consultation and other legal services that pays an administrative fee to the attorney. As the legal Zoom bill, just in case my reading of that was too convoluted, which it probably was, Mr. Chair. With this measure comes to us with no amendment, no fiscal impact, no revenue impact. The Senate floor vote was 28-0, Mr. Chair.
All right. And so I'm looking for a motion to move Senate Bill 922 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Chair Rayfield, I move to pass Senate Bill 922A with a favorable recommendation to the House floor.
Representative Bueller moves Senate Bill 922A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I guess I have.
Oh, yes. Representative McLean.
Mr. Chair, this one, I've tried to do my research on this one. I'm still not clear about exactly what it does as far as the testimony that we heard this last time. And so at this point, I'm going to have to be a no on it.
Would you like to call up Mr. Miller to
ask? If there's someone to ask questions,
yeah,
that's great.
Mr. Miller, why don't you come on up? And this may, and I also understand this may not change your vote, but at least Mr. Miller can try and answer some questions.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of LegalZoom, and happy to answer any questions. Again, the bill just clears up a gray area in statute that originally dealt with other items in the bill, legal expense organizations, and LegalZoom's business model is completely different. There is no risk involved, like an insurance risk for a legal expense organization, and therefore meetings with the insurance division in the interim felt like LegalZoom. Oregon was one of four other states in the nation that had this particularly gray area where, you know, again, they're not an insurance company. They're not providing insurance risk at all. Mm-hmm. They're really just a relationship between customers and a referral to an attorney, mm-hmm. that therefore then that relationship is between that individual customer and that attorney. And so they pay an administrative cost for doing like conflict checks, opening up files for that attorney to do the work. But again, the work is between an Oregon licensed attorney and that customer. And so, you know, from an insurance standpoint, there's no risk involved. So any kind of legal work is between them, like you would an insurance risk where you are are providing some form of premium and indemnifying, you know, that particular, and part of that insurance is also covering your legal costs, for instance. And so, again, the difference here, and so the engrossed version of the bill differentiates between that legal access provider, because there was really no other way to further define it, and that's how they've done it in those other states to clear it up. And so, again, nothing would change the business model of how they do things. It was a matter of clearing that up, so there isn't a gray area in statute that for some reason they would have to be considered a insurance company when they, that's not how they do business.
So can I do a follow-up, maybe? Mm-hmm. Would that be okay, Mr. Chair?
Please.
I guess, so I understand it's not an insurance company, and I also understand it's not a legal service. They're sort of like a middle person who is going to contact or connect a group of customers that are paying a fee per month, mm-hmm. and then they're going to connect them to a specific lawyer when there is an issue that needs legal advice. Is that correct?
That's correct, Ms. Chair Representative.
So then the follow-up question is, what is the fee for? If it's not an insurance and it's not legal services, then I don't understand what the monthly fee is for. It says that it's not an administrative fee. Or is it an administrative
fee? It's an administrative fee, and it's a relationship that for the attorney to have. Again, the attorney in those areas will get into this service, and it's a way to provide legal advice for a lot of small business individuals that may not otherwise go out and get legal advice for, and so at a reasonable cost. And so it's a business model that again works in many states, and that administrative fee is paid for LegalZoom and the attorney on a monthly basis based on those enrolled customers. And so again, they get the benefit of having the relationship of those enrolled customers, because there may be ancillary legal work that comes along with it. But there's no, again, there's nothing from LegalZoom's perspective that you're going to pay in and you may pay out more or less based on some insurance risk. And I think that's the difference, is there's no risk involved from an insurance standpoint. It's not like you're paying in and you may, you know, be paying far in advance for some form of legal risk between, you know, a business or an individual. They just don't have that relationship. So to put them in the same category as someone who does have that risk, which again, that was the original intent of that legal expense organization. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, when you read that statute, it just didn't make sense to have the two together. And that's why we differentiated between the two.
So one more and then I'm done. I want to understand what I'm voting for. So I guess, from what you just said, then they're paying the fee so that LegalZoom can have a group of lawyers assembled that I don't understand if they have a relationship, like a financial relationship, but mm-hmm. they will have a legal list of legal services or legal attorneys in a particular jurisdiction, and then if they need some help, then they pay that fee to get the name of the lawyer and the phone number, and they hand it to them.
And they also get access to legal forms and advice for those forms. So there'll be included time available for that person to be able to consult. And so if they have a form, they're able to contact that lawyer and get advice on different questions that may come up. More basic questions, formations of LLCs. More complicated legal advice, you're gonna call someone like Representative Rayfield and Representative Fagan to do those kind of advice. So that's all included on there. Now, what you may get on top of that is, because they have a relationship with those customers, if they need other legal advice, they're going to use those attorneys. And so the benefit to some attorneys to be involved in that is you do have that relationship with a series of individuals and businesses. But yeah, you do get like, let's say, a discounted rate or a certain amount of time to ask questions and to be able to fill that role and get that legal advice. Again, LegalZoom, though, is not giving any legal advice. They have that relationship, business relationship, where they're getting it from those attorneys.
Okay, thank you.
All right, are there any other questions for Mr. Miller? All right, seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? The initial motion on the floor is to move this bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. So is there any objection to the motion?
Okay, I guess I'm voting no.
Please note that Representative McLean is objecting, and then Representative Holvey and Representative Fakin are excused. And with that, the motion passes. And then is there anyone who would like to carry this to the floor? Okay. Representative Nierman will carry this to the floor. We'll go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 922. And again, we will stand at ease for a moment.
There it is.
Okay, we're back in session. And I'm going to entertain a couple of motions on suspending the rules.
We open a work session.
Oh.
515.
So I have to reopen the work session before
it's easier.
Okay.
Yeah, we can do it. Yeah.
I'm going to reopen the work session on Senate Bill 515A.
I'd like to make a motion, Chair Fagan, to suspend the rules to allow both yourself and Representative Holvey to vote.
Representative Bueller has made a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Holvey and I to vote on Senate Bill 515A. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Vote?
I vote yes.
Aye.
With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 515A and reopen the work session on Senate Bill 922A.
Chair Fagan, I'd like to make a motion to suspend the rules to allow you and the good Representative Holvey to vote on 922A. And to allow Representative McLean to possibly change her vote.
Representative Bueller has moved to suspend the rules to reopen Senate Bill 922A to allow Representative Holvey and I to vote and Representative McLean to be able to change her vote. Is there any discussion?
No discussion on that, Chair. I'm sorry. No. On rule suspension, there's no
okay.
discussion.
Okay, no discussion. Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none.
Representative Holvey?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
And Chair Fagan?
Yes. Okay, with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 922A and open a work session on Senate Bill 675A. Give us a reminder of that.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 675A, we heard this 2 weeks ago today. The measure eliminates the requirement that a bidder and proposer for public contracts to a local contracting agency, oh, yes, please, demonstrate responsibility by submitting a signed affidavit that attests the bidder or proposer complied and replaces that with an attestation requirement instead. The bill becomes operative 91 days after the effective date and has an effective, would become effective upon passage with its emergency clause. I believe, Madam Chair, we're entertaining the -A5 amendment. Is that correct? The -A5 amendment extends the provisions of the measure to contracts with state agencies and also has a conflict amendment which will resolve conflicts with Senate Bill 491, which passed last week, Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. These are three strips of the same thing. So just do the.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -A4 amendments to Senate Bill. The -A5 amendments to Senate Bill 675, dated May 22, 2015.
Representative Rayfield has moved to adopt the -A5 amendments to Senate Bill 675. Is there any discussion?
No. Sorry. I'm hoping Rep. Holvey can explain in a little more detail what all is happening in the -5's amendments.
Oh, certainly. I'm probably not the right person to ask that question. The A5 amendments are not from me.
I would have Diane come up.
Could we have someone?
Diane, did you want to come up and talk about the -5?
Mine were A4s.
Oh. He'd be happy to talk about that.
I can talk about those.
Are we obtaining those?
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Representative Fagan, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Diane Lancaster, the Chief Procurement Officer at the Department of Administrative Services. The Dash 5 amendment to the A engrossed version of Senate Bill 675 actually resolves certain conflicts between this bill and Senate Bill 491, which passed last week. It will extend the provisions of the same measure, which eliminate the requirement for the affidavit, and installs a new feature which will require an attestation of compliance with all state and local tax laws. I think that's about all it does, and we're happy to be supportive of it.
Representative Stark, did you have any follow-up questions?
No.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
And just to be clear, this provision doesn't include public contracting under 279C, just 279B.
Representative Fagan, Representative Holvey, that is correct. Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Oh, yes. So,
Representative Holvey, what's the difference there? What are those two sections? Can you explain
that? Well, I think Ms. Lancaster could probably define it better. One pertains to construction, public construction contracts, and the other to contracts for goods and services, as far as I know, but she may have a more exact description.
Representative Fagan, Representative Nierman, as you all know, there are actually two operating chapters. There are three chapters of the law, the Public Procurement Code, and there are two that specifically run to operations. Chapter 279C, which you asked about, is for construction purposes, and the question was about the extent of this amendment into that chapter. And so the response to that is that this amendment is not affecting Chapter 279C.
So it doesn't impact construction. It only impacts procurement.
Procurement, Representative Fagan, Representative Nierman, procurement of standard trade goods and services and other non-construction related services, sir.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Dan. Any other questions? Representative Buehler.
And we had extensive testimony and materials from several cities and counties, their position on the Dash 5 amendment?
Representative Fagan, Representative Buehler, I would not want to speak on behalf of the local jurisdictions, and there may be representatives in the audience who can. However, I do believe that we have, in my office, has worked closely with the Multnomah County Chief Procurement Officer's office, and so we will, at the end of this particular amendment, Dash 5, I believe we will all, state and local agencies, be moving in the same direction, which will be the removal of the affidavit and the notarized affidavit requirement for 279B and the installation of the requirement for an attestation of tax compliance. I hope that answers your question, sir.
For clarification, Madam Chair, so the original bill that came to us, 675A, addressed local government contracts specifically, and so there was an opportunity for them to come testify for that purpose when we heard the bill on the 12th.
Any other questions for Diane?
Can we hear from the county?
Did you, Tracy, did you want to?
I do have one question for Diane.
Okay, go ahead. No, Diane, sorry. Senator Stark has another question for you.
So I'm comparing the wording from the original and the Dash 5, and I'm curious what the difference, I mean, legality-wise or legal-wise, of a signed affidavit, attesting an assigned affidavit versus representation and warranty. Like, what's the difference in responsibility with those terms?
Certainly. Representative Fagan, Representative Stark, an affidavit, as I understand it from the Department of Justice, is a term of legal meaning, and an affidavit must be a sworn statement. The typical way that it is sworn to in the business community is through a notarization. You take the document, you go to a notary public. And when that word was inserted last session, in the 2014 session, there was an inadvertent impact created by that to require bidders to go and get this notarization. Senate Bill 675, as Committee Administrator rightly pointed out, initially started with the tempering, the removal of that recommendation, of that statutory requirement. An attestation, and the way the language is framed by legislative counsel for this bill, an attestation can be made in different forms. And in this case, I would expect the most common form it will take will be a signed statement by the bidder or proposer stating that under penalty of perjury, I attest to the accuracy of my representation that I am in compliance, that I have not violated any state or tax, state or local tax requirements. There are other pieces of responsibility that any bidder or proposer must also sign at the same time. So it becomes sort of a checklist of items that the bidder or proposer must attest to and say, I am in compliance in all these areas, and then the representation is that. I am representing the company, I am representing that my offering here is true. And that's as a not a lawyer's explanation, but that is, as a layperson, that would be how I would say this works out. The key is that you don't have to have it notarized. And the notarization became a real issue for the smaller businesses, particularly, who have to make their bid form out and then go get a notary. And not all notaries do electronic notarization. So it became a business issue for agencies as well as the bidders and proposers.
All right, other questions for Diane?
I have one. Can I?
Okay.
This might be for you. So on the -5 amendment on Section F, it says that possesses an unexpired certificate from the Oregon Department of Administrative Services, and I think they're referring to something in 491. What is that?
Representative Fagan, Representative Nierman. Senate Bill 491, the key feature of that particular piece of legislation is to establish a gender pay equity training. It is a bit of online training that the Department of Administrative Services Chief Human Resource Office has created. And if you were to come as a bidder or proposer on a project valued over $500,000, and if you have more than 50 employees, then as a bidder or proposer, you must take this class. And it's online, so you go through the class, and at the end, it has a printable certificate. And so to be in possession of that certificate is the requirement.
Okay.
And that says then you have completed that training and met your obligation to be knowledgeable about the various laws regarding pay discrimination issues.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Yeah. I was wondering if someone can tell us the difference in terms of contracting agencies between local and state. What are there differences in compliance requirements?
Well, again, Diane Lancaster for DAS, I'll speak to the state. I would not know that. Clearly, there may be different tax laws, and there are different tax laws at the local jurisdiction level. So the state level, of course, is the Department of Revenue and any other regulatory areas that would be impacted. As to the locals?
Chair Fagan, Representative Holvey, I would need to get back to you on that. I'm not sure if there's somebody in the audience that might be able to provide further information, either the contractors or otherwise.
Could you give your name for the record, please?
For the record, Tracy Rutten with League of Oregon Cities.
Any other questions for Diane so we can let her go? Okay, thank you, Diane.
Yeah.
And did you want to generally talk about the city's view on the -A5?
Chair Fagan and Representative Bueller, I just wanted to clarify that the League does not have concerns over the A5 amendments and that we are supportive of Senate Bill 675 with those amendments.
Does that satisfy your question? Okay, great. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion on the -A5 amendment? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection?
Yeah, I'll object.
So will you please call the roll?
Representative Hovey?
This is on the amendment?
Yes.
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
No.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bueller?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
And Chair Fagan?
Yes. All right. I'll entertain a motion on the bill as amended.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 675A as amended to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Rayfield has moved the Senate Bill 675A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Holtby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be supporting this bill out of committee, and hopefully I'll be able to get an answer to my question as to the different compliance requirements from local contracting agencies to state contracting agencies. And pending that, will determine my vote on the floor.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay, seeing none, Debbie, please call the roll.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Nerman?
No.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Buehler?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
And Chair Fagan?
Yes. And is there anyone who'd like in particular to carry that bill?
Well, sure, I will unless I change my vote.
Okay. And Representative Holby will carry it. He'll let me know if he changes his vote, in which case he won't carry it. All right, with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 675A. And we're going to carry over Senate Bill 358. And I think that was there anything else for the good of the order?
I always like to just say carrying over everything that we didn't move today, just in case we're forgetting something.
And as a safety net, we'll carry over everything just that we did not move today.
Yes, there we go.
Double suspenders. Double, triple totally. Check.
Doesn't move, carry over.
All right, with that, I will close the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. And just as a reminder, we are not meeting Thursday.
I really like that.
For the record.